Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans out there. It is race weekend again. I am absolutely excited about this one. We've got some big, big news coming in, and it can only mean another very important thing, that my name is Kelsey, and that you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start this episode off with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, F1 fans of all ages around the world, he is back. The Honey Badger is back on the F1 grid. That is right, Daniel Ricciardo. First time in 8 months, he is officially an F1 driver again. He is driving, not for Red Bull, but for Red Bull's sister team, AlphaTauri. I cannot begin to express how happy I am to see Danny Ric back on the grid where he belongs, where he deserves. Not only is it great for you, the fans, but it is also wonderful for F1 itself. They need Danny Ricciardo back. They need his experience. They need his enthusiasm. Everybody loves him. He is our generation's Sebastian Vettel. He is our generation's Michael Schumacher. He may not hold all the records, but he holds the records of all our hearts. He is just wonderful at all times. His experience is very much needed on the grid. And I think whatever team he drives for, if you give him a decent car, you're going to get the best out of him that you possibly can. You're going to get the points. You're going to get the experience that he brings to the table. It's only a good thing all the way around. Unfortunately, that means if Danny Ric is in for AlphaTauri, that means AlphaTauri had to drop a driver. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, it is definitely not Yuki Tsunoda. They put in so much time, effort, blood, sweat, and frustration to get to where he is now, to control that temper that Yuki is known for having, that they're invested in him way too much. They were never going to get rid of him. Unfortunately, that means due to process of elimination, that means Nyck de Vries is no longer with AlphaTauri. As of right now, he no longer has a seat in Formula One. If you don't know who Nyck de Vries is, he is one of the three rookies joining F1 for the 2023 season. He is the only rookie driver that actually had F1 experience. He did drive one race in the 2022 season. It was a replacement for another driver who had gotten sick. He got points essentially on his F1 debut. Everybody, including myself, were just praising him for how mature he was. He's 28 years old, one of the older rookies. He knows what he's doing, all this and that. One F2, he won the F3 championship, all this kind of stuff. And then he goes and signs with AlphaTauri and essentially Red Bull. And it was either going to do one of two things for him. It was either going to skyrocket his career. He's going to absolutely kill it and become the next superstar of AlphaTauri and potentially the next superstar of Red Bull. Or it was going to go the way that it just did. Very, very short lifespan in the Red Bull world. 10 races. That's all they gave a rookie to keep his seat and to get points and experience was 10 races. My opinion, absolutely the right choice marketing-wise for AlphaTauri, bringing Danny Ric back in. He would also bring in more sponsorship money. But the lack of faith in your rookie driver in Red Bull and AlphaTauri is not, in my opinion, it's not acceptable. It's not okay. You can't judge a rookie driver on 10 races alone. Normally, a rookie driver's contract is 1 to 2 seasons. By the end of the second season, you're no longer a rookie, and they can actually see how well you fit in to the world of Formula One. Because coming from Formula 3 to Formula 2 to Formula 1, the pressure is drastically different. The cars are drastically different. The media pressure, the social pressure, and the pressure from the fans and the sponsors to deliver every single weekend is just massively different. It's unfair to say, in my opinion, that Nyck de Vries is a bad driver based on 10 races. It's not a big enough collection of data. And on top of that, he was driving a car that even the engineers didn't have faith in. They publicly came out and said, we didn't make a good car. And yet you're judging a rookie on his performance based on a car that you have no faith in. And then you tell him he's not good enough and you fire him after 10 races. That's not fair to Formula One. It's definitely not fair to the development of rookie drivers. And in this case, definitely not fair to the development of Nyck de Vries. Granted, he was the rookie that was having the least success in this season, but not all rookies kill it out of the gate. You got to give them time to mature. You got to give them time to learn, and you got to give them time to get better and get over those mental humps. I don't think AlphaTauri made the right decision for the development of a younger driver. I don't think they made a good decision for the development of the team, money notwithstanding from the sponsorship that Daniel Ricciardo brings. I just totally think they could have gone it a better way. But selfishly, from fan opinion, Danny Ric is back. First race, Hungarian Grand Prix. I can't wait to see him on the road again. I can't wait to see how well he can develop the car and just see how well he does for the first time on the track in real world circumstances in 8 months. Speaking of change in Formula One, the ever revolving door of Alpine still has not stopped, except this time the revolving door has taken out Lauren Rossi. And if you don't know who that is, he's essentially one of the CEOs that runs Alpine. He has been replaced to work on quote-unquote a special project. In the world of racing, in the world of sports, if you're going to go work on a special project, that is the very fancy way of saying you essentially got fired because you don't know what you're doing. Or that the sponsors weren't happy with the job that you were doing, and instead of just coming out and saying you got fired, we're just going to replace you. We'll get someone else to do your job, and we'll find something else for you to do that is substantially less important. Now, his replacement is Felipe Kerf. I really hope I got your name right. He is also the existing brand boss of engineering. So essentially what he does is he okays all the changes to engineering. He makes sure all the sponsors are happy with the development, anything the new sponsor brings in, if they've developed a new piece for the engine, all that kind of fun stuff. That's what he will do, as well as he will take over the existing role of managing Alpine as of right now. Double duty. I honestly don't know a whole lot about Felipe, but he's been with Alpine almost since the beginning through the Renault years. So he definitely knows what he's doing. And Alpine wouldn't give double duty to somebody they don't think would be able to handle the job. And running off the back of that announcement from Alpine, Formula One has officially announced, and thank God they've done this, it has taken them long enough to get to this point, they have officially announced that the FIA and F1 has accepted two teams' applicants for the 2026 approval process. Now, one of these names you've definitely heard before. He's in the world of racing since, you know, time began. Big name in the States. He's come up a whole lot in F1 wanting to buy a team, then wanting to bring his own team in there. The Andretti team that has been linked to Cadillac as well as a sponsorship, their 2026 application has officially been approved. So now here comes the technical part where they're going to look at all the paperwork. They're going to crunch all the numbers. They're going to look at the facilities going by 2026. Is the Andretti name going to be able to actually put a team on track that is fully sustainable? Are you going to have enough engineers? Are you just going to have enough staff in general? Do you have existing facilities that you will be able to use? Or are you building brand new facilities that will be ready by the time the 2026 season comes in? And when I mean ready, I mean built, manned, and fully operational to catch up to the 2026 regulations. Do you have the liquid cash to add into the purse for Formula One? Do you have car designs that fit within the 2026 regulations? All of that sorts of stuff. They're going to go through the fine print. They're going to check all the I's. They're going to make sure all the T's are crossed to make sure that these guys have a legitimate application and they're not just wasting time and money. On top of that, another team has been approved. And these guys, if you know them, you know them. But if you don't, they've kind of flown under the radar. So they're called High Tech. And they have been founded in 2002. They are a UK-based team. As of right now, they're in Formula 2, Formula 3. They're in Formula 4. They've won the Formula 4 British Championship. They are also a Middle Eastern Formula Championship as well. They are very highly regarded in the lower ranks for being very professional. They have extremely experienced drivers that get picked up from the Formula One teams in their junior programs. Really good developmental programs. Their staff stay. They're very experienced. They don't have a lot of staff turnover, and they definitely have the experience that Formula One is looking for. The only question for me is that they've got so many fingers in so many pies that, yes, they've got the experience historically, but will adding an F1 team, will they be able to keep everything afloat? Will they be able to keep everybody organized and keep them at the level that they're at now? To take control of a Formula 2 team and a Formula 3 and a Formula 1 at the exact same time, I hope it works. If they're putting in a bid for an F1 team, obviously their staff members and their management know what they're doing. Let's just hope that the added pressure of Formula 1 doesn't take away from the rest of the organization. And the last topic for the hot topics today, not like they need it, but Red Bull has officially announced that they've got some upgrades coming into the Hungarian Grand Prix. It is a side pod change, oddly enough. Normally, on a successful car like you would see that Red Bull has now, you would expect to see some smaller changes like the brake duct covers or maybe the back wing or, you know, something not as substantial as their side pod design, but what they've looked at and what you can see to a certain extent, and this is a visible change. It's not like you have to know the technical regulations or have to be on the technical end to see it. They've sculpted their side pod so it's a little bit more of an Aston Martin shape. So they've added some angles to it. It's not as much of a bubbly shape. Reports indicate from the wind tunnel testing and all of the on-road testing that they have done that this upgrade itself will give them another 0.02 seconds. Not like Red Bull actually needs 0.02 seconds, but what the thought is now is that they're going to overload this car with upgrades before their wind tunnel time is totally diminished. And then what they're going to do is they're going to start developing the 2024 RB20 just so they can start integrating all the really good upgrades they know that have substantial data behind it, going, okay, this upgrade we're definitely taking, this upgrade we're definitely taking, this one, let's wait a couple more races, it should do A, B, and C. If it works, we'll take it. If we don't, we'll switch it to something else. Reports out of the Red Bull camp say they're starting to focus a little bit more on next year's car, just because essentially when you look at the numbers and you look at the stats and just look how this car, the RB19, is actually set up, that they're winning the year no matter what. So why spend more money and time on this year's car when you can start developing a absolutely monster of a car for the next season? And there you have it, folks. That is everything you need to know in the world of F1. Like I said, it's the Hungarian Grand Prix. It's the Nürburgring. Let's get into qualifying right off the bat. New qualifying standard. It's a bit of a trial going on this weekend. This was supposed to happen in Imola before that massive rainstorm came in and flooded the track where they canceled the race. So what you're going to see for qualifying is normally in a qualifying session, each team can use whatever tire they want. You can use soft, hard, mediums, wet, intermediates, kind of whatever you want to use, you're allowed to use. But what they're trying this time, and this was Pirelli's idea combined with the FIA's environmental standards that they're starting to put into place, they want to use less tires, which is always a good thing. It's less of a carbon footprint, if you will. So Q1, you're going to see every single driver from every single team be on hard tires. Now, whether you're good in them, whether you're not, it doesn't matter. You're driving hards. Q2, everyone's riding mediums. Again, doesn't matter if you're good with them, doesn't matter if you're not, you're riding mediums. Q3, you are riding softs. Now, this is where most teams are normally for qualifying, but they kind of have to earn the privilege to get to Q3 to actually use the soft tires. I expect them to just absolutely love this change. Some drivers are already starting to complain that they don't like it before they've even raced or even tried qualifying on the hards. Mainly the top four teams, like a lot of the both Red Bull drivers, both Mercedes drivers, they're all like, well, I mean, it's good for the environment, but it's not necessarily good for racing, even though they haven't even tried it yet. So let's get into qualifying. Weather, kind of an issue, especially earlier in the morning for full practice. It did have some rain. It did dry out. Track temperatures, you're looking at about 32 degrees Celsius, which is fantastic for hard tires. So far, we're off to a fantastic start. It didn't really affect the drivers themselves, although the fact that everybody's track time was a little lower than it normally would be, I think it was because you have more laps that you have to get the hard tires into that perfect spot, opposed to you just jumping your soft tires off to the races. You get these smoking hot times. They had to build up to it. It took more time than it normally would. And you could see this really caught out a lot of the player or a lot of the drivers. A lot of them that were expecting super fast times were about midfield. It mixed the grid up quite nicely, which is what I enjoy. It also made some of these teams go down to the very last lap, which doesn't normally happen. Mercedes, perfect example. George Russell was killing it, took some lap time off, went back into the garage, waited to see if his time was right, if he would make it in. Normally when you're on soft tires, like George Russell loves to drive, you've got the time, you do one quick lap, your tires are up to speed, and then off you go. Well, because you're doing hards, not so much of an advantage this time. If anything, it was an absolute disadvantage, as George Russell qualified 18th. He didn't even get out of Q1. I'm not blaming the tires. I'm not blaming the car. I'm blaming the strategy. It's not like a normal qualification. You can't just go out there, blow out a time, and expect to make it in, or go back out on track with 2 laps left and warm the tires up, or 2 minutes left. You can't do that. You need 2 minutes just to warm up the tires, and then you can go for your hot lap. Absolutely did not help George Russell at all. It also evened out the field quite substantially. Max was not hundreds or seconds ahead of people. It was down to between first place and 10th. The difference was about a half a second. That's how much this kind of qualifying change evened out the playing field. One team that absolutely did love it was Sauber. I mean, Zhou Guanyu in P1 was first. When time was up in Q1, he normally runs around about 13th or 14th. He usually makes it into Q2. He was first. He's used to running on longer tires. He's used to running on a tire that takes longer to warm up. That's what Sauber does. In this case, it was perfect for him. He stayed out the majority of the time. He was doing the laps when he needed to. He knew when the tires were in its exact right spot, and that's when he would do his hot lap. It was fantastic to see. So your bottom five after Q1, Logan Sargeant was 20th, Kevin Magnussen was 19th, George Russell 18th, Yuki Tsunoda 17th, Alex Albon was 16th. First thing right off the bat to finish off Q1, Daniel Ricciardo showing that he has absolutely no rust when having 8 months off and not racing Formula One. He hopped in the car. It looked like he had not missed a day. Slow motion cameras, he was a little shaky inside the cockpit just because he's not used to the G-forces. The Hungarian Grand Prix is known for having a lot of heavy turns, a lot of G's pulling on your neck when you make those turns. So a little wobbly inside the cockpit, but time-wise, absolutely killing it. Q2, you're on medium tires. Now they're starting to get a little faster. Now they're getting used to the range of speed and the type of tire that they're used to. Speed or time from first to 10th was 0.37 of a second. So automatically you can see they've made up 0.02 of a second because faster tire, they're getting used to it. They're warmed up. They're in their groove. It's fantastic to see. Cars of note. I mean, Daniel Ricciardo, solid out front. He's making the most of his opportunity. He loves the mediums, super, super good. The track, on the other hand, you could tell it's starting to wear on him just a little bit. He looked visibly tired after qualifying. Unfortunately, he doesn't make it out of Q2. And then on the flip side, again, Alfa Romeo, Sauber, they're looking super fast. Both cars really tuned in, real dialed in for the qualifying. They're good on hards. Valtteri Bottas is amazing on softs. They both know what they're doing. They both make it into Q3. Verstappen, at the end of Q2, he still makes it into Q3. Don't worry about that one. He's third. So this format's really, really evening out this field. He's not as fast as he would normally be. Alex Albon was in the top five. Lando Norris, again, super strong, pushing Verstappen, especially in qualifying. It was great to see. It was super exciting. By the time Q2 was done, from first to 15th, 0.88 of a second. So less than a second covering the entire track of cars, the entire field. It's what you want to see. That's the kind of qualifying you want to see. No one's blowing anybody out of the water. They're that close. It's really pushing the drivers to the edge. So from 11th to 15th, 11th, you've got Carlos Sainz in 11th, 12th is Esteban Ocon, 13th, Danny Ric, 14th, Lance Stroll, and 15th, Pierre Gasly. Really encouraging to see the AlphaTauri and Daniel Ricciardo out qualifying some people that last year in the McLaren he had some issues with. It's just showing that the upgrades have worked, and it just shows the experience that Daniel Ricciardo has. And now we move into the time and the big boy tires that we all wanted to see. Q3 soft tires. At this point, the weather is absolutely perfect for these guys, and they are absolutely cruising. It was amazing to see. It came down to, as it always does, it seems, in qualifying, the last sector of the last lap with absolutely no time left. And it was very, very interesting to see if the upgrades for Red Bull would actually be useful. Both cars had the upgrade, and you would expect them to be blowing everybody out of the water. But because this is the first race with the new upgrades and because of the new tire selection and everything like that, it wasn't as a throwaway quali as you would expect. Verstappen did not run away with this. Perez definitely did not run away with it. Both of them in the top 10. A little bit surprising by the time we were done. Max essentially was under qualifying pressure the entire time just because they've won so many races in a row that they're on a streak. They are the powerhouse. If you don't come first, it's a massive big deal. And essentially by the end of Q3, it was a massive big deal because in the last sector, on the last lap, with no time left, Verstappen is on provisional pole, which means if the race was to start right then and there, he would be on pole position. He would be in first. Lewis Hamilton, with no visible upgrades, super consistent the last couple of drives. The car is really coming into its own. Pulls out and shows his experience by when he crosses the finish line. He beats Max Verstappen by 0.003 of a second. 0.03 of a second. He gets pole position. It was amazing to see. It was fantastic, which makes Verstappen third, but he just is ahead of Lando Norris by 0.085 of a second. So what I'm reading from this is the upgrade from Red Bull, it's more of a race day upgrade than anything else with the side pods, because you've got other cars, you've got other circumstances where it's not just a one lap free for all. Hamilton is starting to come into his own again. The car is finally maturing the way they want it to. He's got the speed. Granted, it's only 0.03 of a second. And the big question is, how is that going to relate to in race pace? And three, for me, the most important one is that McLaren's speed from the last couple races and the pole position that they've got and the points, it's not a fluke. It's not a one-off. That the upgrades to both cars are, I don't want to say they're substantially working, because that would just diminish the effect that they have, but they are showing the type of upgrade that every team dreams of. You take your time, you bring it out in stages, but when you bring it out, it makes an immediate impact and it lasts. It's not just a flash in the pan. They're here to stay. They're here to get those points. And as of right now, I think McLaren is a bigger challenge to Red Bull than Mercedes is. It was just amazing to see both McLarens in the top five. Like that was a dream shot last year and the year before. It was just an absolute turnaround from the last 2 years. It's amazing to see. So let's just get right into it. Your top 10, Hamilton on one, Verstappen is second, Lando Norris third, Oscar Piastri in fourth. He is the rookie that is definitely living up to the hype and all of the drama that happened between McLaren and Alpine. It was worth the headache, the storylines and all that kind of BS. Oscar Piastri, I've changed my opinion. I was wrong. Oscar Piastri will be the rookie of the 2023 season. Number five, Zhou Guan Yu. Sixth is Leclerc. Seventh is Bottas. Eight is Fernando Alonso. Ninth is Perez. Tenth, Nico Hülkenberg. Biggest surprise, and I hoped the team wouldn't do this, but I also kind of expected it at the same time. Fernando Alonso is in eighth. What I think Aston Martin has officially done unintentionally is the new upgrades they've added to the car are not upgrades. They are, unless they release another magnificent package in the second half of the season, I think Aston Martin has upgraded themselves out of contention. It's become a hindrance. It's not working. Fernando Alonso, the first quarter of the season, he's third. He's in second in qualifying. He's second or third in the races. And you see that slow progressionally dropping off. They've got their upgrades, and then the rest of the cars have their upgrades. So they're keeping up with them. Red Bull just released another upgrade, but it's too early to see how that one works. But Aston Martin, it seems like they're going in the wrong direction. Again, unless I'm totally missing something and I'm out of the loop, and they bring in an upgrade package in the second half of the season that just puts all the pieces together and they absolutely dominate the second half of the season, I do see Aston Martin losing their position in the Constructors Series if they don't start to pull it together. Unfortunately, I can potentially see Fernando Alonso losing his position in the Drivers' Championship as well if Aston Martin doesn't get these issues sorted out. But hey, everything changes on race day. Everything changes from course to course, weekend to weekend, lap by lap. And with that, folks, let's get into what we're looking for, what you're waiting for, the details, and the highlights of race day. The 2023 Hungarian Grand Prix, we're talking around 12, 70 laps, 14 turns, top speed 305 kilometers an hour, total length of each lap 4.38 kilometers. It's an amazing course. It's a course that looks super difficult to pass on, but there are definitely opportunities to make some, you know, we'll call it hair-raising passes. There's also some good straightaways where you can make traditional DRS passes. Fastest lap, 1.16, 1 minute, 16 seconds, 0.6, Lewis Hamilton, 2020. So that record today was not broken even as fast as Max Verstappen was going. He was still about 7 seconds off the pace. We were expecting an amazing start. The lineup was amazing. Hamilton, then Verstappen, then Norris, then Piastri. We know all four of these drivers have amazing speed. The McLaren, new speed to this era, but we know the drivers have the experience. They've got the pedigree, and they're hungry for the pole position. Lewis Hamilton, 7-time champion. You know he's got the experience. All of a sudden, the Mercedes, as of late, because of the new upgrades and the tweaks and all this kind of fun stuff, they've got the pace, they've got the speed, and more importantly, they've got the consistency. They haven't had to change any major parts out that would wreck their allocation before the second half of the season. Remember, if you go through too many parts of your car of a certain piece, all of a sudden you start to get grid penalties. Last season, Mercedes, Ferrari, and McLaren all got into points and parts trouble because they'd have to swap out multiple parts. All of a sudden, you'd qualify really well. Then you get a 10-spot grid penalty, and now all of a sudden, you're starting further and further back. And if you are not confident in your machine, you're not going to get a confident race, which means you're not going to get the points you deserve. This has been the total opposite, especially for McLaren and especially for Mercedes this year. Max Verstappen starting in second. He was not happy about it at all. He wants to be first at all time. He is the 2-time, soon to be 3-time reigning champion in a row of Formula One. Yeah, it's not Lewis Hamilton 7 times, but he's the one that dethroned the 7-time world championship. So we were expecting an amazing start to this race. The formation lap was quick. The weather was perfect. Trackside temperature, 37 degrees Celsius. Now with the race, you can ride whatever tire you want to. They're expecting a 2 or 3 stop race, but you can start on the mediums, you can start on the hards, you can start on the softs. It's totally up to you, whatever your strategy is. Strategy in this race generally comes down to the second pit stop. If you blow through your tires too early or too too rough. If you're too rough on your tires, you may have to add another pit stop. This is not what happened in this race. It was amazing. There was no screw-ups when it comes to strategy, which was absolutely wonderful to see. You could really see the drivers on performance. You could see them being able to race without the concern of, hey, if this doesn't work out, my team's going to screw me, or a long pit stop and I'm totally screwed. Pit stop length in this race ranges from 21 to 22 seconds. That's a long time. It's one of the longest ones on the Formula One calendar. So you got to have that fast pit stop. We know Red Bull's got the fast pit stop. We know McLaren, it's generally around about the faster times. They're not as fast as Red Bull, but they're still within the top three teams, which will definitely help you along the edge. So, start of the race, it was fantastic. It was hair-raising. There was a little bit of drama, and it pretty much set the first three drivers for the rest of the race, and this all happened in the first lap. The takeoff was amazing for three out of the four drivers. Traditionally, this season at least, Max Verstappen has not had great starts. In fact, he sucks at them. He's just thankful that he has a car as good as he does, because this year he is not good at standing starts. Today was rather the exception to the rule. He got off that line like he had purpose, and obviously he did. He's going from second, he's trying to get first. He blows past Hamilton, and I mean like almost felt like Hamilton wasn't really trying that hard, or he wasn't paying attention when the lights went out. Hamilton all of a sudden has to defend against Max Verstappen. It doesn't happen. Max just blows right by him very safely, very consistently, and it happened before the first turn. Now, all of a sudden, Lewis Hamilton on the first turn has to deal with two very, very fast-coming McLarens, and he loses out. He goes from first to fourth by the time the second corner comes around. It was an absolutely horrible start from Hamilton. It is not characteristic of him at all, but hey, race day is race day. They get about halfway through the lap, if that, then all of a sudden we've got massive collision. I think it was actually the first or second turn where all of this happened, and it was a combination of four different cars: Zhou Guanyu, Danny Ric, and both of the Alpine cars, Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly, and we're all holding our breath. One, because you want the drivers to be safe. Obviously, that is the first concern. But Danny Ric's in an accident in his first race in 8 months. Like, come on, what kind of luck does he have? Essentially, what had happened was Zhou Guanyu hit the back end of Daniel Ricciardo, which sent him into the back end of Esteban Ocon, that took Pierre Gasly off the track. But then Esteban Ocon, I don't know how this happened, but Esteban Ocon ended up getting airborne about 3 meters, slams down on his car. Reports are that he cracked his carbon fiber seat when he hit the ground. He hit that hard. Everyone was okay. Everyone was able to complete their laps. Unfortunately for the Alpine team, both cars were wrecked beyond repair, so their day was done two corners into the very first lap of the Hungarian Grand Prix. Horrible day for Alpine. Horrible, horrible day for Alpine. Zhou Guanyu goes from fifth. All of a sudden, by the time all this melee was done, he drops all the way down to 17th. On top of that, he is given a 5-second penalty for causing a collision. My opinion, rightly so. This decision did not take a long time for the stewards. It was plain as day to see what had happened, and the domino effect nails him with a 5-second penalty, rather. Getting a little excited here. And Joe was never able to recover during the race. He was hit with that penalty. He's lower on down. The Alfa Romeo, just for some reason on race day, on today, just did not have the speed that it had when it came to qualifying. It looks like it's becoming a really good one race wonder, or one lap wonder, where there's no traffic, there's no actual racing, you're just trying to beat the clock, which is not the direction that Alfa Romeo wants to go. They want a car that will absolutely destroy in qualifying and be able to keep up in raceway. It looks like the last couple of upgrades they've done, they've kind of gone the way of Alfa Romeo or Aston Martin. The upgrades have actually hurt them a little bit, but this is still the first race from the new upgrades, so we'll see where that goes from there. Another car in the race that you would thought would have done really, really well, Fernando Alonso, started in eighth, he just, there's not, he's not fast anymore. He's got the driver capability, absolutely 100% without question. But when it came to race day today, it seemed like something massive had changed overnight. He had little to no speed. He was able to keep up, but he spent the majority of his race, the 70 laps, defensive driving. He did pass a bunch of people. He was passed a bunch of times. He just, it sounded like that he was just doing more defensive work than offensive work, which is generally not his, I mean, it's his forte, but it's not the way he likes to drive. He wants to be out front. He wants to be leading the way. It just, today was not his day when it came like that. I want to know, where did the speed go? I'm sure he wants to know as well. Hungary was not the race for Aston Martin today. There seems to be a trend when it comes to the last couple of races, especially for the fact that if you take out the top three drivers, there's more passing between 5 and 15 than there is probably the top three for the last 10 races put together. There was a ton of passing. Now, granted, a lot of this passing and changing of position was due to the pit stops. Like I said, 21 to 22 seconds, it's a long time in Formula One, especially because a lot of these guys, there were no massive gaps outside of the top three. We're talking, I think the biggest gap was like 3.4 seconds, and that was because car A just passed car B and is trying to catch up to car C. So he's making up that extra gap, but other than that, we're talking 1.4, 1.5 seconds. So when you go in for your tire change, you're losing between 7 and 12 spots, depending on how close these guys are together. So the strategy definitely was in play for this race. Like I had alluded to earlier, strategy for everybody was perfect. There was no double stacking. There was no pit stop that took 9 seconds, 10 seconds. There was a little bit of a hiccup with one of the teams. One of the automatic guns did not indicate that the lug nut was on the tire. Engineer, fantastic capability, switched over to their backup, lost maybe a half a second. So I think longest pit change was like 4.2 seconds because of that incident. But it wasn't driver error, it wasn't engineer error, and it wasn't strategy error either, which to me is the more important part, even for Ferrari. There was a little bit of question at the beginning of the race. Carlos Sainz was moving faster than Leclerc, and there was some question of, okay, when do you release Carlos Sainz from behind and just let him go? The team sorted it out perfectly and ended up sorting itself out on a pit stop and just general ebb and flow of the race. It was fantastic to see. First pit stop. So because of the evolution of the track, which means it keeps getting faster and faster, because of the temperature, and I know I'm jumping around a lot on this one, but bear with me. Because of the temperature and the evolution, Pirelli had stated that the tire that you're on, and most of them started on mediums, it's somewhere between lap 10 and 13. Okay, that makes sense. You got these drivers that can go a little bit longer. You got some cars that chew through tires more than others. First pit stop, lap 10. Okay, that was the very first driver that came in. Now remember, there is at this point now 18 drivers because we've lost both Alpines. First pit stop, lap 10. The next pit stop after that, which was way, 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 way long down the road, was 29 laps later. That's absolutely ridiculous for tire life. And it wasn't Max. Max took it all the way to lap 23. Lap 22, sorry. That's when he first boxed his tires. So he's taking his tires 5 to 6 extra laps longer than what is recommended. Okay, that's not too bad. But when the very last person finally goes and they're extending it 12 laps longer, then you started to get into the realm of, okay, now maybe the strategy is to go super, super long and then wait for everyone else to do another quick pit stop and just go extra long again and hopefully get that advantage. It worked in some extents and it didn't in others. But when you're looking at the monumental difference, it's 29 laps on the same tire. And that was George Russell. 29 laps. He's not generally known for good tire preservation. he's good till about, you know, mid-pack. If the tire says it can go till lap 20, he can kind of take it to lap 23, 24, but nothing super long, like an extra, like an additional 12 laps. Did it help him? Did it not? When it came to that kind of strategy for Mercedes today, that was more of a driver's perspective. Did it help him? It got him in the top 10. So he got points almost in the top five. He ended up being sixth. So I think if George Russell can continue this trend of tire preservation, and if the car at Mercedes continues to evolve the way that it is, I can start to see George Russell, you know, becoming the new, you know, goat of longer tires. He'll turn the long run into a precise science if he can keep going this way. But it was fantastic to see. And there was no panic in his voice. There was no, oh my God, we're going to try to outdo this. We're going to go outdo that. They're like, how are the tires? George is like, yeah, they're good. We can come in the next couple laps. Lap 29 later, starting to, or 28. Yeah, I'm starting to lose grip a little bit. Okay, come in for a box. That was perfect. By the time he was done his, only seven laps later, the next set of tire changes were happening for the first guys. That's how long he was on that stint, which was absolutely amazing. Second set of tires came in lap 36. Now, you've only got 70 laps. Now, here's the strategy. Do you get your second set of tires in lap 36? Remember, that's the very first guy to come in at lap 36. So let's say between 36 and 40, you go in for new tires. Okay, so now you've got 30 laps left. Do you push the tires? Do you try to save the tires? Do you try to do a little bit of both? You manage your tire grip till last 5, 10 laps, and then you super push it, or maybe 10 laps, then you start to be really aggressive. It seemed like everybody had the exact same idea, because between lap 36 and 45, I think, was the last one, everybody finally got their new set of tires. Everybody switched to either hards or mediums, which means this was the last stop of the race. Nobody went on softs. Especially this year, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Max. I don't care if you're Hamilton and you have the best tire preservation in the history of Formula One. You're not taking soft tires 30 plus laps or 30 laps in 37 degree weather. It's not going to happen. You're going to have a blowout. All the team strategies recognize this. This was the last pit stop. Again, super smooth. We had a couple of changes in grid spots, but nothing drastic, nothing out of the ordinary, which led up to a fantastic end of race sprint, I guess you could say. They were really pushing from lap 35 on, or 45 on, to the very end. They were racing for those points. When you start to do this kind of strategy where you've got one pit stop, you've got the rest of the tires that will last you the rest of the race, some teams are better at tire preservation than others just from experience. Point being, or point in case, we're looking at Red Bull and we're looking at Mercedes. They have the history of knowing when to push and use their tires at an advantage, for an advantage. And they also have the experience and the knowledge and the data to know when not to push to save the tires until the very end. Now, you've got teams like Alfa Romeo, Aston Martin, but specifically in this case, McLaren. They are relatively new to being in this top five thing. They are relatively new to being, hey, we're competing for some serious points. And especially in Oscar Piastri's position, almost ignorant of the pressure that you should be feeling because you're in the top five. He raced a solid race. He was very calm, very cool, very collected. There was one little bit of a hiccup out of a pit stop that he thought he was going to come out in front of Norris. He ended up coming out behind Norris, and that's just because Norris had a lap that was amazing. There was nothing that McLaren did wrong. It's nothing that Piastri did wrong. Just Norris had a kick-ass lap. He was in free air, clean air, and he got a really good time in. That was kind of the only little bit of a hiccup. Race pace definitely show that they are here to stay. This is not a fluke. The upgrades are awesome. Don't touch them. Don't tweak them. If you're going to change something, change the color scheme of the car. Change the paint. Don't touch anything else. This is definitely showing that. But what it's also showing is that maybe Piastri and Norris aren't quite used to the added pressure of 15 laps to go, you're in the top five, and now you have to defend against people like a seven-time world champion, that you have to defend against, you know, not necessarily a champion, but secondary drivers that are used to getting first, second, and third. Really strong beginnings, carried fantastic speed. Middle of the race, again, fantastic speed, really good consistency. They're not doing track limits. They're not missing corners where they should hit. But by the end of the race, it could almost seem like the car and the driver was getting a little tired. They were starting to make little mistakes that they wouldn't have been making at the beginning or the middle of the race. It's kind of like that constant pressure and the constant grind got to them just a little bit, where they were massively ahead, all of a sudden they're starting to lose time to a veteran who's not making any mistakes, not necessarily going faster than them, but they're just having a cleaner race because they're a little bit more experienced. They know that this is a marathon and not a sprint, and that they've got the cape. They've got that mindset. We're at the back end. Now's that time to concentrate, maybe have a little bit of water, clear the mind, and here we go again. It's that little race at the race. It's that race against yourself. It's paying attention. It's making sure you don't miss your marks, that your gear shift is fantastic, that you're not slipping or sliding, anything like that. Unfortunately for a McLaren, one in particular, Oscar Piastri, he was in the points at one point. I mean, he was still in the points, but he was really close to a podium finish. He ended up finishing fifth just because I think the fatigue got to him a little bit more than it did Norris, but another fantastic outing from McLaren. A lot of good points, a lot of good learning experiences, and a lot of positives to take from the weekend. Lando Norris, on the other hand, I don't want to say he held on at the end, but I think the fatigue was also getting to him and the car. By the time the race was done, he was several seconds ahead of the third place person. Lando Norris ended up getting second podium, second straight race in a row. Fantastic. But again, you could see super good beginning, really good middle. At the end, he was starting to peter out. If it was, let's say, 75 laps, he would have not, in my opinion, I don't think he would have made podium. That the two cars that were behind him were just catching up to him a half a second at a time, a quarter of a second at a time, just because their race was cleaner, smoother, and I think their cars were just handled a little bit better for the heat, and their tire management was just a little bit better than Norris. But hey, he ended up on the podium 1.3 seconds ahead of the car that was behind him. Another team and another set of cars that you saw kind of have this opposite evolution as McLaren, in this case, Mercedes. Really, really, really horrible start. Like the first first quarter of the race, first third of the race, it looked like both Russell and Hamilton were just fighting their cars. Russell was having a much better day. He gained a much more strategic spots than Hamilton did, but Russell gained more spots by people's pit changes than he did actually passing people. But the first half of the race, first third of the race, it looked like both guys were just fighting the car. It was not responding. It looked like it was too heavy. There was no grip. The response just wasn't there. Then you got to the middle of the race. All of a sudden, you start to see a trend in the Mercedes. You're going through more fuel, which means the car weighs less. All of a sudden, your traction's back. The response is where it is beginning to be where it should be. All of a sudden, the drivers don't have to fight the cars as much. Hamilton was saying that at the beginning of the race that the car was really difficult to handle. Same with Russell, that it was heavy, it was unresponsive. But then the middle of the race, and especially at the end, you're running on minimal fuel. Then all of a sudden, the Mercedes comes into its own. It's killing track time. It is catching the cars ahead of them. I mean, for Hamilton to pass Piastri, it was a little bit of work. But the pace that the Mercedes had and the responsiveness just blew the McLaren out of the water. Same with George Russell. He was climbing the ranks. The less gas he had, the better the car was. I think that they've still have potential in the car. But what they think is, I think they over-tweaked the car in Hungary to be more responsive on less fuel, obviously, where they need to find that little bit of a balance, where from a full tank to an empty tank, you need the same type of responsiveness. You still need the same type of handling, and the drivers can't fight the cars all the time. Now, that being said, this worked out in Mercedes' favor at the end of the race because they were faster than everybody else with the technology they had. Now, let's just hope Mercedes doesn't tweak it too much for Spa, because that's a much longer weekend. The track is my favorite track, and Mercedes does okay, but they need to fix that balance where it needs to be a endurance car, not so much an end of the race kind of sprint car. When all things were said and done, Russell started at 18th. He finished at 6th. He was my vote of driver of the day on F1 TV. It was just fantastic to see. He didn't get into his own head. Nice, smooth drive. Again, most of his positional gains were from other people in pit stops. But again, the Mercedes strategy was amazing. He only lost 2 or 3 spots when he did his pit stop. So, fantastic race for George Russell. Lewis Hamilton, I mean, not the best race, seeing as how he started first and finished in 4th. He's still in the points, still in the top 5, which is great. But again, it's just that tweak of the car. Had absolutely no momentum in the beginning, and by the time he found the momentum, which is around lap 34, it was a little bit too weak. It was too late for him. He was able to make up some ground, but not enough to actually make it, in his version, a very successful weekend. It was another kind of lackluster weekend for Ferrari. Only meaningful thing, Charles Leclerc got a 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane. It was super obvious. He was coming in way too hot. But a super consistent drive for Ferrari. Nothing out of the ordinary. Their strategy was on point. Nobody got screwed over. Nobody got wrong tires. Speed was consistent. Driving was smooth. Communication was great between both drivers and their strategists, which is amazing to see. It's also about time. And they finish in the top 10. You're looking at 7th and 8th. So Ferrari's getting the points they need to stay in the hunt for the Constructors' Championships, at least from 2nd down, which will make their sponsors happy. Would I like to see them with a little bit more pace? Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, they're getting in Q3 and they're getting in the top 10. So you're not going to catch Red Bull. You know that. I would like to see them push a little bit harder to catch McLaren, or to keep McLaren behind them, and to start catching the Mercedes a little bit more than we know that they can. Which brings us to the last team that we're going to cover, Red Bull. So Perez, good job. Another good recovery. He qualified 9th. He finished 3rd. Super good drive. He was aggressive when he needed to be. I think he's learning to be aggressive because he has to be, because he's not qualifying where he needs to, which I think is making him an all-around better driver, to be honest. If you qualify 1st and 2nd every single time, you may not get the experience that you need when you fall behind, or if you have a bad day, if you get into a mix-up, if something happens and all of a sudden you fall behind, that you have to be able to catch up. Some drivers can do it, some drivers can't. Perez has put himself in a learning experience on his own doing. The car is great. We know that. The strategy is on point. It always has been this year, and it always will be for the rest of the year. Even with the aerodynamic restrictions that they will get in the second half of the season, the car is still a rocket. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. It's the consistency of Checo in qualifying. Beginning of the season, he was amazing. Qualifying, top 2, top 3, all the time. Then all of a sudden, 5 races in a row, he's making Q3 sometimes. He's putting himself in a position where he has to drive more aggressively than he wants to. He is learning a different driving skill. He's learning to drive from the back and to catch up. Makes him a better driver. Also doesn't really give him the points that he needs for the constructors, although he is still helping Red Bull. And he just keeps falling further and further behind of Max in the driver's championship. Now, would he have caught Max anyways if he was in the top 5 every single time, even top 2? Probably not, just because Max is just, he's on that different level this year. But he makes that race so much more stressful than he needs to. Checo, you got a great car. You really do. You're starting to become more consistent in your race performance. You've always had good race performance. You're just learning to catch up now. From 9th to 3rd, really great catch up. Really good advancements through the grid. Just, you don't need to do that all the time. He just needs to, I think he just needs to get out of his head when it comes to qualifying, do his best, and he's going to be in that second position more times than not. Again, his race breakdown, really strong start, even stronger mid-race, I would say, because he made up all of those spots. By the time you got to the end of the race, he was in such a comfortable position. It didn't seem like he was coasting, but it also seemed like he knew he didn't have to try that hard to keep his position, which is great in this circumstance. I just hope he doesn't get too comfortable in that position more often than not, which leads us to Max, Super Max. Well, he won, no surprise, but it took Max 22 laps to be 22 seconds ahead. He passed Hamilton before the first turn, and he literally never looked back. Most cars that have the aerodynamic availability and price tag of these Formula One cars do not gain a second a lap. That is ridiculous, especially when there's nobody in front of you, which means he has no DRS. Max had DRS for maybe 15 laps out of the 70 because he kept passing people. But in the actual race itself, for someone to challenge him, he didn't have DRS the entire race. And he just drove off, literally drove off into the sunset. He's won this year. I do believe, I have to double check my math, but I do believe by the time the summer break shows up, which is after this next race coming up, mathematically, I think all he has to do is finish the race and he wins anyways. I think by after Spa, if not the race after that, mathematically, he can just stop racing, like literally not finish an entire race and still win the Drivers' Championship. Red Bull would still win the Constructors' Championship. That's how dominant he's been. That's how impressive the car's been. Also, from a fan's point of view, if you're not a Red Bull fan, that's also why the races are so damn boring. By the time Max won the race, he was 33.5 seconds ahead of Lando Norris. And McLaren is the car that is going to give him the most amount of trouble this year for the second half. And still, 33.5 seconds ahead. It is absolutely ridiculous. And he's setting records, and the team is setting records yet again. They set two records this race this year. This will be, one of them is a 2023 record alone so far, just because we're less than halfway through the season, so this record might be broken. Fastest pit stop so far this year, 1.9 seconds. Less than 2 seconds to do adjustments, put four tires on, and off you go. Literally, count it out. We're behind already. He's gone. Literally, shows up, one, gone. That's how fast they were today. It was amazing. It was on point. And the FIA a couple of years ago, everything was automatic. You'd show up, you'd put your tires on, the sensors would tell them when they're done, and off they go. I think they had a fastest pit stop of 1.8 seconds, I think. Teams were complaining, they're too fast, we need to slow it down, we need to turn it to more of an manual system, introduce human error into the pit stop timing and speed. And even at that, it's like these engineers, that is what they practice, this is what they're supposed to do, and they've got it down pat that before the end of the first half of the season, 1.98 seconds, absolutely ridiculous. That is a 2023 F1 pit stop record. I do not believe that will be beaten this year or next year. And if they do, I'm going to say it's going to be beaten by Red Bull again. With this victory, Red Bull as well also sets a brand new Formula One record that was set 20 some odd years ago by McLaren. And that is Red Bull has officially won 12 straight Formula One races in a row. Previous record was 11 set by McLaren. It is now officially broken by Red Bull. I don't expect this record to be broken ever. Just for how dominant Red Bull is, unless something massive happens, they're going to win Spa. They're going to win COTA. They're going to win Vegas. They're going to win whatever races are left this season. Red Bull will win the majority of them. I'm saying that by the time Red Bull loses, that record will be, and a lot of you guys are not going to like this, I'm going to say 17 races in a row before Red Bull finally loses one. 17. So they've got five more races to go, and I don't think that record will ever be beaten in the history of Formula One. And on that note, folks, that is the wrap-up for the 2023 Hungarian Grand Prix. Max wins, as always. Red Bull in the lead, as always. Let's give you the top 10. Number 1, Max. 2, Lando Norris. 3, Checo Perez. 4, Hamilton. 5, Oscar Piastri. 6, Russell. 7, Leclerc. 8, Carlos Sainz. 9, Fernando Alonso. And 10th, Lance Stroll. Drivers Championship, Max Verstappen is definitely ahead now, 281 points. Second is Checo Perez with 171. Alonso is in third with 139. Hamilton is right behind him now with 133. George Russell with his sixth place today jumps to fifth with 90 points. Carlos Sainz drops to sixth with 87 points. Leclerc has got seventh with 80 points. Lando Norris goes up to eighth with 60 points. Lance Stroll drops to ninth with 45 points, and Esteban Ocon rounds out the top 10 with 31 points. I called it. The second, third, and fourth standings for the second half of the season is going to be absolutely close, especially that second or third and fourth spot between Alonso and Hamilton. If Hamilton stays on the same trajectory as he is, and Alonso is on the same trajectory as he is, Hamilton is definitely going to be clinching at least third in the Drivers' Championship by the end of the year. And even at that, they're less than 40 points difference between fourth and second, where Checo Perez is sitting with 171 points. So it is definitely going to be a race for second to fourth for the second half. Constructors' Championships, Red Bull with 452 points in first. Mercedes is in second, 223 points. Aston Martin is in third with 184. Ferrari still hanging in on fourth with 167 points. McLaren with their wins is still in fifth, 87 points. Putting some distance between them and Alpine, who is in sixth with 47 points. Williams and Haas are still tied for seventh and eighth with 11 points. Alfa Romeo is in ninth with 9 points. And good old AlphaTauri is in 10th with 2 points. All right. That was the Hungarian Grand Prix. And those are the constructors' standings. Now, we have one more race before the summer break. And not only is it my favorite track of the entire schedule, it is the weekend of July 28th and July 30th. It's in Belgium. It's called Spa. And not only is it that fantastic race, but we're going to finish the first half of the race with a sprint weekend, folks. That is right. We've got another absolutely jam-packed weekend coming at you next weekend. First and only practice on Friday, 5:30 a.m. This is an early race for us here in Canada, folks. Pre-qualifying show is at 8 a.m. Qualifying for the actual race on Sunday is 9 a.m. from 9 to 10. Sprint shootout, Saturday morning. Don't hate me for this when I tell you this. The sprint shootout, if you want to watch this live, it's at 4 a.m. Not awesome. Practice number 2, Saturdays at 4:30. Pre-sprint race show is at 7:30. The actual F1 sprint race on Saturday, 8:30 a.m. So even if you want to watch the highlights to qualifying, you still have to get up at like 6 a.m. And if you're getting up at 6, you might as well get up at 4, watch the actual qualifying, go back to bed, and then get up at 8 for the race at 8:30. Let's skip to Sunday. Pre-race show, 6 a.m., actual race, 7 a.m. our time. I know it's an early weekend, but coming from me, as it is my favorite track, and because it's a sprint weekend, I know it's a heavy weekend, but this is definitely a race you don't want to watch the highlights for. You want to watch this race. You don't want to see the highlights on social media. You don't want to see who won off your Tinder or your Facebook or your Instagram, you absolutely have to see this race live. It is always exciting. It is always an experience. Whether 90% of the time has something to do with it, the drivers will be on point. The weather, hey, who knows? But that's what makes F1 exciting. So from all of us here at F101, tune in next week for the complete breakdown of the Belgian Grand Prix.